Good afternoon, as we get people starting to roll in here.
See, our background looks fake, doesn't
Oh,
it? It's real. It's not a green screen, I promise. Room. Our middle son just graduated, what, like 2 weeks ago, maybe? 3 weeks ago, graduated high school. So it's kind of like as a parent in your brain, you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm free. Well, at least from having to get up at 5:30 in the morning to make sure he's up for school. And then Yaya, we dropped Yaya off at summer camp 2 days ago. And so Yaya is at an elephant summer camp where she's spending the week taking care of elephants with a group of little like young girls. And so me and Chris were like, we don't have any kids. Let's go.
yeah.
And so we ran away, and I say, I really gotta say, I love my Marriott points because I was able to pay for this whole, like the whole trip as far as where we're staying using my Marriott points. And I don't even use all my Marriott points. And so it pays sometimes to be loyal when it comes to like hotels and airlines and points and certain credit cards. A couple years ago, we did a trip with my parents, and I paid for the whole thing with Marriott points, with not Marriott points, but my Amex and Marriott points. So we're in Cancun, Mexico, with no kids. Or no, we're not in Cancun. Sorry,
Cozumel.
we're in Cozumel, Mexico, with no kids for a couple days. And we decided to just continue to work. Because I don't know about you guys, when you go on vacation, though, I get bored. Like, and so we decided to, like, it's a vacation, but we're still working. It's a work vacation. All right. What time is it? I can't tell.
With one or two more mates.
Oh, okay. I will tell you one thing. It's hot in Mexico right now. So we flew into Cancun, then we always stay in Playa del Carmen, but the beach is not nice right now in Playa. They have a seaweed problem. So we hopped on a ferry over to Cozumel, and it is really nice. Sadly, yesterday my hat blew off into the water, so I don't have a hat.
You saved the other hat, the second hat.
Yeah, so I don't have a hat. And Chris almost jumped in to get it, and I was like, no, please don't jump in. You don't know how deep that water is. So, all right. I hear myself in you.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I'll go
Okay.
turn mine off here in a sec. Off.
We have the music on.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can get started. This is our weekly Tuesday Q&A calls. I have some really good questions teed up for everybody.
Take care of the room here.
Okay, some great questions that have come to us over the last couple week last week or so. But before we jump into the questions, Chris, if you want to just share the slide of every week we release this, we're getting more and more organized, right? It's just a graphic of what's happening now, what's happening next, and what do you need to know. Because I realize there's so many moving parts to what we're doing. A lot of people want to be able to keep up with what we have going on. The first thing I want to tell you is you don't have to do all these things. These things are for different reasons. So right happening this week, we have our weekly Q&A. Our OS1 implementation sprint. So if you're in our OS1 group, we have a meeting on Thursday. And then next, we have our continuous improvement is in July. That is one of our monthly deep teaches. And then in August, we have our in-person next execution lab or build room where we're going to build all the things that you need for your people side of your business. So what does leadership look like in a system? What does your onboarding look like in a system? And that is in Chicago. Super excited for that one in Chicago with Ricky Rigolato, Dominic Williams, and Matt Green will be teaching at my people execution lab. And that's something you want to make sure you don't miss. So we'll drop the links so you guys can check them out. And if you have any questions at all about any of these are all of, we're calling them sessions. They're either they're free and open sessions, they're virtual sessions, they're live in-person sessions. And so we have something going on weekly, monthly, and quarterly, just so you know.
Great. I'm going to stop my screen share here.
Yes. And also feel free to drop in your questions. So if you have some questions, drop them in. That way we can get them answered. We can capture them. And so if you've been to my in-person events, we've already done two. I'm doing four this year, and they're going to rotate every year. So we've already done the ops. We just finished customer, which is all things like sales and marketing. And then we're doing people in August. And then in October, we're doing financials. Ooh. Mm. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you're ready to kick it off?
Yes.
I want to go ahead and start with first. There was a question that somebody had asked, and they said, I need a VA, but the problem is I don't have anything digital in my company yet.
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. And I think as remote work becomes more popular, and not even just remote, I think this is something you have to think about, even if you run an in-person office, is that the problem isn't that you need a VA or that you want to go remote, it's that you don't have anything out of your brain yet, right? You don't have anything digitally captured in the company, and it's probably still living in your brain. I would assume it's not living in a binder or in a notebook.
Right.
Maybe it is, maybe it's not.
Or if it is living in a binder, I think sometimes we created it so long ago that at this point we're like, we're not sure if we should even use it.
Yeah. So the real answer, right, is, or what a lot of people would tell you is, you should document everything first, like document it, then go hire your virtual specialist, virtual assistant. That will work. But I think there's more than one way to do this. And the reality is that as a small business owner, are you ever going to get around to actually documenting everything? Like, are you ever going to do it?
It's a forever process. Let's just say that.
Most of the time it's because we're too busy. So there's two ways to look at this. And I want to give you two options for those that are looking to, and this will be applicable whether you're hiring a VA, if you're trying to digitize, or if you're just trying to capture processes. You can either build them first and then hire, right? That's a clear path. It's pretty straightforward. And then you bring someone in and then you instruct them to, hey, follow these things, right? The benefit, it's a little bit less training and less confusion, right? You don't want to bring them into chaos.
Yeah.
The downside is that how long will that actually take you? Will you actually do it?
Which is great because, you know, when we first started working on self-sabotage exercises, what we came to find out with yours was the phrase, I'm not ready yet.
I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet. Who can resonate with that statement? Like, you want to do it, you know you need to do it, but you keep telling yourself, I'm not ready yet. Like, when I'm ready, or when I get it ready, when things are perfect.
Yeah.
And we know that that never comes.
Yeah.
So that was option one, is that you document first, then you hire. And option two is you hire first and you build together, right? This path is it's more for growing, or it's more for really helping your business actually grow it and take it to the next level. Because if you give them the processes and tell them to follow it, have you pressure tested them, right? Are they what you actually follow? And then are they just following like in a cycle? They don't know how to build. So then if they don't know how to build, they can't continue building in the future and for growth. So you could hire a VA to either like assist you, to help you, to coordinate, or like a project specialist that has the understanding that one of their first responsibilities is helping capture and organize the business. And we see that with a few of our, I actually seen him on here, JP, got to give it to you, JP. He's one of our virtual specialists. And he is killing it. I actually stole some stuff from him.
Yeah.
He was sharing some microplates. I was like, ooh, that was nice. I'm going to take it. Can I have it? He was building for one of our customers. And so you could hire that way too, with the intention that this person will help me build.
Yeah.
So, you know, instead of, you know, just waiting, you could also have the intention that they're going to help you build, but you have to realize there's work up front on both sides. So the work up front before I hire is I have to capture all this stuff. The work up front if I hire first is that it's going to take meetings, collaboration, questions to pull the information out of me so that that person can then document it, organize it, capture it. So over time, the business will become more digitized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I really like that because, you know, I went through the rut of trying to build everything myself originally. And the same thing, it wasn't that I'm not ready yet. It was that I wasn't done yet. Two different things. And so it took me forever and things just kept not happening. But what I ended up doing, there's a few different things. Is one that helped me out is in handing off to somebody, is simply having a brain dump. And actually, May is probably my saving grace now. I think she's in the call here. Yep, she's in here. But she helps to kind of restructure or rebuild, really, a lot of the thoughts that go through our heads. We do a lot of like talking notes, note talking, note taking, brain dumping. But she goes ahead and she cleans it back up and gets it delivered to us in a way that we can actually use. So that's something that also is like, if those meetings, yes, you have to have the meetings, but if those meetings are nothing more than just a talking point, a brain dump that you can record and capture, and then they can go ahead and run with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the biggest mistake that most people make, it isn't hiring before the systems exist. That's not the mistake. The problem is hiring and expecting them to know magically how to create systems without access to your brain, to your knowledge, to your information. And so the mistake is I hire someone for help, but then I don't want to meet with them because that takes too much time. They should know how to do this, but then they don't know how to do this. And that's the biggest mistake, is hiring someone and expecting them to help you build without access to that knowledge, to your knowledge.
Yeah.
And that for me, and everyone can contest to that, like I am super big on voice messages, voice recordings. So it's faster, I don't have to type it. They can get access to that knowledge. They dump those through transcripts, they upload them into Leia, and then we're done. So it doesn't matter like which path you choose. There's not like a right one. It's just got to be right for you. And what kind of approach do you want to take? And the information, here's the key. The information has to come from you, the owner. It has to. So it doesn't matter if you hire first or hire after. It matters. It doesn't nearly matter as much as how you think and in the knowledge and the information as you have in your head.
Yeah.
So that's the key. It's you got to decide which one's right for you. It's never going to be perfect and you're never going to be ready.
Yeah.
If that's what you're waiting for.
Yeah, that's a great point. So real quick, we had a question here on with Leia. Can you limit access to Leia to team members, such as sales only to the sales game plan? Julie, I will say that not quite yet. Right now, what we have is at least trying to keep it on a simpler format right now is what we have is purely the owner. We have leadership, which leadership we define as people who can build in your company. And then we have, again, team members, which are
teammates,
which are typically your sales position,
your consumers of information,
but they deliver, you know, they help out in the office or wherever that might be.
Yep. And then we have our technicians in the field. But Julie, I have a question for you. Why would you want to limit access to a game plan to only like say for sales? Is you can drop it in the chat, but I'm a really big believer in transparency. And, you know, from a sales perspective, I might need access to how we deliver the service, or I mean, I might need to look at how are we doing marketing. And so thinking about running a very transparent company, internally, so everyone can have a pulse of what's going on and not creating silos, right? I think that's the more traditional way of doing business. Like if I'm in sales, I just need sales stuff. But I found that that creates silos and separation and creates gaps in a company, which then the gaps are there and that's where things drop and things get missed. And it's not like Chris described this to our team the other day. It's everyone's in a relay race, right? And we know how a relay race works. And sometimes maybe you need that sales. In my company, the way we operate, you're going to do whatever we need you to do, even if it's outside your job description.
It's actually written in as...
Yeah, we actually add that in. So maybe I need that salesperson to help me with marketing. Great. Like you got access to it, read it. Or I need that salesperson to say, hey, I need you to help me take over scheduling because the scheduler is out or quit or is sick. And so running like a relay race with handoffs, but you can't learn those handoffs if you don't have access to the information.
Or I think also one of the things is that for them to be able to understand or have a pulse on what's coming up or what's about to come. So let's say that they are going to hand off the position for a short amount of time is in a relay race, you typically have three people. And let's just say the first person is there to start the race and they start running and they have the baton in their hand and they go to hand it off to the second person. But the second person is staring straight forward, not behind, trying to see how far away that first person is. But if that person starts to run past them, they're like, oh crap, I'm late.
Yeah,
I got to start running. So we want to keep that visibility.
Absolutely. And she said the problem is not being transparent. It's just she thought it was a lot of information for someone. You know, just keep a pulse on how much information's in there. Also, if it's tidy, it should not be overwhelming. So making sure it's tidy, like organized well. But I wouldn't worry about that necessarily. I think we're worrying about like one of my philosophies, and I'm a reformed overthinker, is I had to stop worrying about things that weren't a problem yet.
Yeah.
So we don't know if this is overwhelming to them yet. So don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Because we need more space in our heads to worry about things that are actually a problem.
That's great.
Yeah. Next question.
Yeah. So, can you edit or type? So more so with Leia, you know, font, bold, italics, etc. When editing, creating playbooks, yes, you can. It's really what we call it is Leia docs, is being able to work through there and clean up and stylize all that info. Because again, the idea here is making it simple, but making it easy and clear.
Yeah. And then to answer your next question, before we go on to the other questions, is are we any closer to Leia separating larger SOPs? I don't know the answer to that, but I know, Julie, that my workaround, because I have that same issue, is that I take the whole SOP, I put it into Leia as a microplay, and I say format only, and I have it generated, and I have it sit at the top of my game plan. And then I personally break them up into sections and create mini, mini sections just manually. So the next, like the header in your microplay would be, I'm sorry, the header in your SOP would be like the title. And then I would copy and paste that, and I would just use format only. And I've done that with a handful of docs because I didn't want to wait anymore. And I just broke them up into micro sections.
Yeah, it works great for, yeah, the employee handbook or...
That's actually, I did that. Well, I didn't, May did. with the Organize It handbook, we created micro plays and we just took the sections from the handbook and created them out one by one. And it literally takes 10 seconds. So like copy, paste, generate, copy, paste, yeah. Generate. Yeah.
Great. So we did have a, I had another question, which is, it's a big nugget. The question was asked, how do I stop being the bottleneck in my business?
Well, so it's funny. I think this question has come up a few times because I think we answered it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But so there's a few things I want to kind of explain what does that mean? So most people think they're the bottleneck because they're too busy. Like it goes back to the, I'm too busy. I can't make my systems yet. I'm too busy. Like I'm too busy. And so you're slowing things down. And so traditionally that's where we thought or we feel or we think bottlenecks come from. So usually the bottlenecks comes from the fact that you're the decision maker and there's too many things running through you, right? You're the decision maker. So everything stops at you. That's the bottleneck. It's not that you're too busy. So those are two different things.
Yeah.
The I'm too busy, I think for me, at least it was an excuse.
Yeah.
It was like my blankie or my coping mechanism of like, if I didn't get something done or if we were stuck or stalled, I'd be like, well, I'm just so busy. Like,
and I'll share. Yeah. I can share an example here in a minute of me personally. And so, you know, I've straddled, let's just say every position possible in the companies that we have, you know, everything from operations to development to marketing to whatever else we find. But, I created like I think what Julie mentioned before is like, you know, is it too much information or can I just talk to one topic to one person specifically? And so I used to do that and I would share info with one person or one department. And then they would come and ask me again for input or feedback on what should I do here or how should I have this ready. Can you go ahead and put it in for products? And so we would have something that was new for marketing that then needed to be handed off the product. But I was the person who was in the middle. And so what ended up happening is I was Rome. I was in the middle, but you had all these roads that did not connect any other way except to me. And I think in the book, it's called Wendy.
Wendy.
Yeah. But inadvertently, I was creating these silos, not really knowing it, because I thought I had to be the connector to connect the different departments. But what we ended up doing is that we ended up putting that transparency out there and creating this shared environment where now all of a sudden marketing is collaborating with products are collaborating with operations, and operations giving feedback back to product and marketing.
And man, does it move faster. And man, do you see your people like step up and you're like, dang, they like, you know, they're kind of like outpacing you.
Yeah.
And so it's a great thing to like watch, see. But going back to the decision-making issue, right? So usually it's because you are the decision maker. There's too many things that run through you. So there's a difference between too busy and being the decision maker. And so somewhere along the line, this is true with moms, especially for all my women out there, somewhere along the line, being busy turned into like a badge of honor. Remember, it was like, oh, I'm a great multitasker. Well, now they say that multitasking is horrible because you can't give 100% to anything. And so we started to wear the I'm too busy like a badge of honor. But when we look deeper at the problem, if you have a bottleneck in your business, you know it because you're stalled. You're stuck, you're stalled, you can't move. And if you look deeper, you're going to discover that the business can't move unless you approve it, you answer it, you solve it, or you fix it. And that's the problem right now. Like, if you're the bottleneck.
So can you say that again?
That's why you're stuck. It cannot move because you've created an environment or a business that you have to approve it, answer it, solve it, or fix it. And that's not a workload problem. That is not a busy problem. That is a dependency problem. Everything is now dependent on you and going through you. So some things that you can look at, right, when it comes to dependency, and the common signs is, and here's some common signs, is does every question comes to you. Estimates go through you without needing approval. Employees wait for instructions. Customers want to talk to you. How many are still in that bucket? I want you to just put I in the chat. If customers, even though if you have a salesperson, even if you have a scheduler, do customers still want to talk to you? I see Stephanie. She's like, oh no. I've learned this a couple years ago. I'm like, especially in Organize It, you guys need to keep me as far away from the customers as possible because I will fire all of them.
Yeah, Stephanie's got the head nod.
I'm like, I will fire every one of them. Customers want to talk to you. Problems pile up when you're gone. Like, can you go on vacation? Can you leave? And vacations create anxiety, right? Do you get anxiety? Or not even just vacations, conferences, work trips, you know, doing stuff with your kids, do they create anxiety? So, you know, most people don't realize they accidentally have trained their team to rely on them. Yeah, they have. I mean, I was 100% guilty of this. And sometimes I get back in that rut. I'm like, I just had a kind of affirmation moment. And I said, oh my God, I need May to run the meetings because the meetings I'm running, they suck. They're horrible. I can't pay attention. And then I can't listen. And then I can't actually be in the meeting because I'm running the meeting. And I was creating a bottleneck because then I couldn't answer anybody in the meeting because I was running the meeting. And I was like, I gotta hand this off.
Mm-hmm.
So some solutions, right? Or a real situation where people think they might be, they think the answer is delegation. So a lot of people think that the answer to this is delegation, but I don't, you know, I don't, because the answer is a decision transfer, not delegation. And there's two different types, there's two different things. So delegation, and this is really great. I have a lot of the VSs on here too. If the owner says this to you, you can always come back and reaffirm or re-ask the question for my VSs, right? So delegation says, do this task for me.
Yep.
Like, hey, I need you to make a Facebook post for me. Decision transfer says, here's how to make this decision without me.
Yep.
Here's how you make this Facebook post without me, right? Those are two completely different things. Again, a delegation versus a decision transfer. A bad delegation, a bad example is, hey, I need you to handle the customer complaints. How many of us have said something like that, right? I need you to handle the customer complaints. That's a bad, bad delegation. A good decision transfer is, if there's an issue under $200, I need you to solve it immediately without me. If it's over $200, can you please escalate it to me? Now the employee knows how to move. They know what to do, and the owner disappears out of the process. I think this is a great topic.
I love it.
I think, like, this is, and I think it's because traditional business thinking taught us that, like, the delegation, hand it off. It's the who, not how. Remember that book? I love that book. But very few people teach you how to hand it off and think about it in a transfer of decision versus a delegation. And this is my personal experience. Do you notice how short the delegation sentence was versus the decision transfer sentence was, right? So I want to read it again. Bad is, hey, handle the customer complaints. A good decision transfer is, if there's an issue under $200, you can solve it immediately without me. If it's over $200, please escalate it. So here's why I sucked at this for a long time. I wouldn't slow down long enough to actually, instead of writing a three sentence word, to actually write a 15 sentence word, which provides 100% more clarity and direction versus the three sentence word. That is me, how I operate at my core.
Yeah.
And that's why when I first started to delegate, I failed. I mean, I went through, especially when I first started to hire in the office and I had an assistant, and then, like, yeah.
And I think that's also tough too, especially when there's so much going on around you that to slow down for even a minute feels like it's violating some business rule.
Yeah. And so I have a challenge for you guys. The challenge is, Most of you guys have Leia or any AI product or whatever you want to use. Is it every time an employee asks a question, instead of answering it, I want you to answer it, but on paper, capture the question, capture the answer, right? And add it to, you know, a Google Doc, add it to Leia. I would prefer Leia, but add it to Leia, right? And then you can start to train your AI, especially in Leia, train your AI on it. And so it becomes smarter and smarter and able to think and answer more like you.
Yeah.
I would say Tiffany Welch is probably the greatest example of this one. So instead of asking you the question, you can now tell your employees, hey, did you ask Leia? I swear to God, I'm going to make t-shirts. Like, hey, did you ask Leia? So one of the biggest mistakes is it's not that nobody can do it as well as you can. That's not it. It's that you have not given them a clear decision transfer. And then that creates the bottleneck, the chokes of everything is running through you to approve it, solve it, fix it, and build it. So something to think about is you can find the top three questions in your business right now or wait for the top three to be asked. You could go in your chats and automatically find them, right? Those questions are asked every day in your chats, whether you're using like Slack, Google Chat, WhatsApp, and create a checklist and a decision rule and put it into Leia. Start making a checklist, just a brain dump checklist. What are the top three questions? What if I made the decision transfer, right? How do they handle this? And that is simply a game plan with the steps followed of how do you do this? How do we go about it? If I have to give a refund, you're allowed to give a refund up to $200 without asking, you know, the office manager. Or I think one of our micro plays is they don't talk to me about any damages, any issues in our cleaning business until we have to involve an insurance company. And then Libby needs to know if it's beyond, I think we have $500. I don't know what it is. I'd have to go back and look. Then Libby would need to be involved if the insurance company needs to know. But then I don't talk to the insurance company. My office is doing it. I just need to know. Yeah. Great topic.
Yeah.
Questions.
Yeah. I know that Caitlin had mentioned, they did train customers very quickly that my ops person will be over communications. So trying to get that off of your plate to get the owner outside of that's great for the customers.
Yeah.
Start training the customers on who is in charge of the communications. Awesome.
Next question. We're stuck. Oh, Christine's. You want to read it?
Oh yeah. So, she mentioned we've been stuck at a revenue for quite a while. It's more that she needs techs, not so much the office. So my team is self-reliant and basically runs the day-to-day. But the question is, am I still the bottleneck? I can't see how to fix this problem.
Yes, you are. It's always your fault. It's always our fault. I think that you are still somewhat the bottleneck. Until you can nail down this hiring, right? The recruiting, the hiring, there is a solution. And I think it starts from the top. It always starts from the top because it starts from the owner, right? Because sometimes we have to dive back in, right? That topic was being a bottleneck. But when you see a bottleneck, also, how do you release that choke?
Yeah.
So, you know, since you've delegated and your office is running, it's self-sufficient, you know, is it time to dive back into the recruiting from the owner's perspective and reevaluate what we're doing, who we are. And I mean, from like a higher level, because this is one of the things we're going to talk about in Chicago, but it's becoming the company that people want to work for. It's becoming that company, that leader. And the fastest way to attract people is through consistency, right? And through leadership. And this is even down to technicians. And then the fastest way to really attract those people is from the top.
Yeah.
It's always top down. And then, you know, relooking at everything, because we've been in this situation where we couldn't keep people. It wasn't we couldn't get people. And as good as you could think our systems are and as on point as they are, when you take yourself out of the vacuum and you really audit it and you tear it apart and you look at it, recruiting at its core is actually really simple. And it pretty much works for anyone if you use a system and you're consistent. But to attract the right people, right? To attract A players, to attract right people, to attract people to that ad, to the job, to your company, to your website, that is completely different than recruiting, right? To me, that's like looking at next level leadership. How do I and the company start to attract people through our messaging, through our brand, through everything we do, through who we are in the community? And it's interesting Because recruiting is recruiting. Like, we all post on Indeed, they go through the application process, we filter them out, but it's starting higher than that. And it's interesting because, you know, for us, people want to work for us. We have a really great reputation. We used to do a lot of things locally, and then I went all digitally. And we were able to keep that reputation by doing things online, putting ourselves out there, but also through our current technicians, through our office staff, through our social media pages, really conveying who we are, how we represent ourselves, and trying to attract those right people through you know, your again, they say your core values, but it goes so much deeper. My question is like, Pristine, why would anyone want to work for you? And I'm not questioning why they would want to work for you, but you need to ask yourself, why would anyone want to work for me?
Yeah.
Why would anyone want to join this team, this organization, this company? What can I benefit? Like, what can they benefit? Yes, we can pay a great wage, but aside from the wage, why would anyone want to work for me? And for me, I had to answer these questions because about 4 years ago, we had an issue and I had a coach tell me, Libby, why did you start Organize It? And he was like drilling me down. He's like, but why? Because we had turned into a company of like, just, we didn't, the people that were working there didn't resemble us, who I, like what I wanted and who we were. We were just hiring people. And I said, well, I opened it because I'm very passionate about helping women and moms and creating like that work-life balance. It wasn't because I wanted to pay a great wage. I do want to pay a great wage, but that wasn't why. I created Organize It so that moms could go to basketball games because I was that mom that needed to go to basketball games. I was. And so I created it, but what we were advertising and what we were attracting was not that. And so I kind of had to like dial it back. And, you know, talk about, reassess on what were we trying, why were we trying to attract certain people and what could we do for their lives?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that kind of went along with, you know, before it was trying to hire people or find people based on what you thought they wanted, which ended up catfishing them into not working for your company because it didn't align with who you really were or what you really wanted to do or what you were passionate about.
Well, that's what we were doing.
Yeah.
We wrote this like ad and it was all about what we what we thought they wanted to hear. And in reality, we kind of had to take it back to the drawing board and get very passionate about who we were, why we wanted to be one of the best companies in Fort Myers, and who were we trying to attract? And so then I dove really deep into being woman-owned, being Native-owned, being Hispanic-owned, you know, being a mom. We talk about moms, like I talk about moms on social media, not necessarily because I'm trying to attract customers.
Yeah.
I'm also trying to attract employees. And so we went back to that because at one time, just to be completely transparent, you know, I thought I was trying to help single moms, but to be honest, our schedule for cleaning is too inconsistent and the single moms quit and they had to, because, you know, the cancellations and just things would affect the schedule and the consistency. And we were not consistent enough to attract and retain single moms. And so I was like, maybe that's not what I was trying to do. Like,
yeah.
And just really kind of dialing it back. And then everything you do, you have that decision filter that you run through it. And is this who we are? And we even started to cut out stuff like parties and the games and the extra stuff. Cause it
even
wasn't, and it wasn't, cause it wasn't us. It was who I thought we were trying to be. And I put that in our ad and I'm like, that's not what anyone who would work for me wouldn't care about those things.
Yeah.
And so what I did was I locked myself in a hotel room for 2 days, 2 days straight. And I went through everything, looked at everything. Did it align? Was this who we were? Is this who we were trying to attract? How did my ad to my application to my onboarding feel? And so where we found our issue was in onboarding, not in attraction in hiring or interviewing. It was an onboarding. It's a monster of a beast. And you have to see how does it flow through. Onboarding, what was our problem? Well, we over-delivered in the ad and in the interview. And then when we hired them, we fell short on onboarding and my office was kind of disorganized.
I wouldn't say over-delivered in the ad because you said
over-delivered compared to what we were delivering in the onboarding.
Yeah, because what you would have delivered is when you are on point. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we were allowing like the scheduler and people to influence how new hires got onboarded and how they felt. And they were just leaving. Like we couldn't even keep somebody past 5 days. And we thought it was the trainers, and we thought it was the quality, and we thought we were hiring the wrong person, and we were making the wrong offers. In reality, it was my scheduler. It was my scheduler creating pure chaos in the schedule, changing stuff constantly. And then also in my office, we weren't delivering when we said. We would say, hey, you'll get one shirt on this day, three shirts on this day, you'll get your supplies on that day. And we were not following through. We were like, oh, we'll get it tomorrow, or we'll give you your supplies on Monday instead of at the end of the day, Friday, when we told them that. And now it's, you know, we cleaned all that up. I saw those inefficiencies. I saw those gaps. And then we have hard set rules on a lot of things that we do when it comes to, you know, the process. But for us, it was onboarding. You're going to have to find that gap. Is it upfront? Is it attraction? Is it the volume coming through? Is it the show rate at the interview process? Is it the interview itself? Are we selecting the wrong people, or is it my onboarding, or is it my retention? Because it can just keep going.
Yeah.
And the last thing I want to tell Pristine, a lot of people traditionally will tell you, oh, just spend more money on Indeed. I want to play like the devil's advocate here. And I don't think that's necessarily the solution. I think we have to spend some money on Indeed, but that's not the solution. That might be a short-term fix on a long-term problem.
Yep.
Is just throwing money at it versus finding the root cause of where's that bottleneck happening. And I don't think anyone can do this but you, the owner. I don't think you can delegate this out. The audit, the assessing, the walking through it. How does it feel?
It's being there, seeing it, feeling it. And you have to be really close to the company to be able to do that.
Yes.
Yeah, I see Nicole had mentioned, you know, agree with this. I can sell the job so well to an employee, but when they come in, the system for training and upkeeping on the new hire, it's broken.
Yeah. No, we had, I'm laughing because we do the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have someone for this role, and this causes chaos. Everything is great, but then they're just thrown in into the very busy schedule. And we'll say that fully packed schedules, we now need to do better here. Somehow they stay, but no, this is an area that needs to be improved. So they're sticking through it, which is good.
What was the quote you said earlier today about you don't want to put them into chaos? You don't want to onboard someone into chaos? No, what did you say? It was something you said this morning. We were walking.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Anyways, so that's definitely, there's gaps, and it's good to see them.
Yeah, and I would even push back as well is you don't have someone for that role. I'm assuming onboarding or something similar to that.
Well, I onboard everybody through a 3-hour video.
Yeah. And so to kick it off real quick,
yeah.
You know, I tell my 8-year-old daughter, Yaya, almost every single day, and so much so that even she's able to repeat it. But there's an elegant solution to every problem. And so even though we don't have a person for a specific role, let's say, for onboarding, Libby, I think you found your elegant solution.
I do. And what I happen and... So I want to answer this, but I also have something I want to say to Christina as well on this topic. And I forgot what it was. It's like, okay, I'll go back to the onboarding. Christine, there was something else I wanted to tell you. It was really important. And now I can't remember it. It'll come back to me. So you don't have to think about, especially in this day and age, do I need a person for this role? Or can I fill this role somehow using like tech or technology, right? And so when I took myself out and I was auditing the whole experience, right? When I found the inefficiencies and the gaps, one, you will be mortified. There's no way you'll go through this and be like, oh my God, we're amazing. And if you are, then like you need to take off the rose colored glasses.
Yeah.
Because we're small business owners. Like, you know, we're lucky, you know, that we've gotten as far as we have. And so it's not like we're corporate and we have everything figured out. So you will be mortified, and you should, because then you're going to see the gaps, and then that means those can be fixed. And so when I did this, one of the biggest things I found was the inconsistency in how we onboarded, or orientation, let's just say, of new hires, the orientation. And then after that orientation, then they, you know, then the scheduler was jacking around with the schedule, and then the supplies were a problem. And, but that I found during orientation, which was day one, was it wasn't a great experience because my office was reacting to the day-to-day stuff. And that new hire that was getting onboarded felt it.
Yeah.
A cleaner would call out, or a customer would cancel, or there's a complaint, or someone was having a bad day. And then they felt that through their onboarding, which was the energy, which is not a great feeling. And so that's why the 2 days I locked myself in a hotel room, I also created a 3-hour video where I personally onboard everyone through a video walkthrough, everything down to like, and now we're going to fill out your I-9 form. So let's pause the video. Like, okay. And now we're going to watch your training video. Like, let's pause. And then now we're going to watch, now you're going to fill out your W-4. And so I saw that, Nicole, and I created the solution through like a board, and it has every day and every single step that you're supposed to take to onboard, you know, an employee efficiently. And there are rules, like non-negotiable rules, where you do not touch their schedule. You don't do this. Like,
yeah.
Because it's all about, well, you know, it's all about creating that upfront experience so you can deliver on the expectations, because in return, we have those same expectations. That's what I wanted to say to Pristine. I remember now. Let's talk about, so this is true for like in general in life, but this is very, very relevant to recruiting. And I was talking to someone the other day, and they were talking about they're selecting the wrong people, and this is wrong with them, and that's wrong with them, and I don't see anything on their resume, and they can't work hard, and they don't have a good work ethic. And the first thing I said was, anyone with a resume wouldn't understand this job.
Yeah.
Because she had mentioned she's hiring people that are too soft, like they can't work hard. But I'm like, none of my technicians that I have ever hired, I don't think ever gave us a resume, because if they're from a resume mindset, they're not from that type of labor mindset. It's a different mindset.
Yep.
But we're taking traditional coaching advice and methods saying, oh, you need a resume. And then, but like, let's just be upfront, laborers, people who are cutting lawns and cleaning, yep, aren't traditional resume type of people. And there's nothing, it's not to like belittle or talk down. They don't. And so we have to make sure that when we're recruiting for this type of position, looking back at your past technicians and saying, where did they come from? What, like, why are we demanding a resume in a world where I could put anything on a piece of paper, but we're judging them off that resume? So if you're asking for resumes, and I don't know if you are or not, that's one thing to look at, is the laborer mindset is different than the person that comes up with a resume and then on day three says they interview well, but on day three they say this is too hard. Well, I could have told you that, but that's not the resume.
My favorite phrase, this wasn't what I expected.
Yeah. And so, yeah, and they're fake. And so then the other part of this that I want to really hit home on, and nobody talks about this, so this is going to be the passionate side of me coming out, is that we need to stop looking for all of the negative reasons why we should not hire someone. Please. We never do this in from a lead perspective. I never get a lead and say, oh, let me figure out why I shouldn't close this lead. But we get an applicant and we think to ourselves, let me figure out all the things wrong with them so I can not hire them. And I learned this years ago in my organizing side, when I would go in and work with a customer. So to professionally organize, it's like a coaching session, like a therapy session. You cannot focus on the negative with a customer going through a purging or an emotional process. You cannot focus on the negative because they're going to shut down and they're going to look for a reason to not continue the process. But that's what we're doing to ourselves in recruiting. We're focusing on the negative. Why shouldn't I hire you, Chris? Oh, well, you didn't stay very long at a job. Well, you didn't have a resume, or like,
I had the hardest time through COVID trying to find a job.
But we're for some reason, somewhere along the line, we started focusing on the negative, why this person wouldn't work, why we shouldn't hire them, why they're a bad fit, versus focusing on the positive. So let's go back to my organizing session. When we do a session, we focus only on the things they want to keep in their life and not on the things they want to get rid of or purge. Because again, if I'm focusing on the negative, then I'm giving a reason for them not to continue the process. When it comes to recruiting or even business, when it comes to marketing and leads, we're focused on getting that lead closed. We are. But when it comes to recruiting, we're focused on trying to disqualify them versus trying to qualify them. And I think we might be missing out on some really good candidates because we're focused on the negative. And so I'm going back to a conversation I had with someone who's struggling to hire. And she went and offered someone on the bench the job. And the person actually worked out. She's like, they worked out really weird. They're like my best hire. And I said, but why did you put them on the bench? And she passed them up for someone who didn't work out, I said, why did you put them on the bench? She goes, well, I don't know. Like, they just didn't interview well. They were quiet. But we keep offering the job to the people who are good talkers or good interviewers. And so that's where the CT fingerprint comes up.
Yeah.
Like the CT fingerprints, I made it years ago for Woot Recruit. It's built into Leia Works now, but I'll also drop, I don't have the graphics, but I can drop the graphics somewhere for you guys. I'll put them in my Facebook group. So the one layer deep operators Facebook group, I'll drop them in there. But these were all of the things when I surveyed 200 companies that they found that made the great characteristics for a cleaning technician. And then we also have it for lawn care as well. But what we found was when we did this was we weren't attracting the right candidates through our ads. Right. And then we weren't interviewing. We were hiring the overdoers, right? The things that we saw, but we were passing up candidates on the things that we didn't see. And that's because we were looking to disqualify them. And it's one of my biggest pet peeves that in hiring and in recruiting, we're always so focused on the negative, the disqualifier, the disqualifying them, why they won't work, why they won't be a good fit versus focusing on the positive. And by doing that, we're probably losing out on some great candidates.
Yeah. Libby, I was going to go ahead and drop in the link here. We'll share the info into that one layer deep operators group.
Yeah, I'll share this. I have three slides and they're just the traits, the characteristics to watch for. A lot of verbiage on the slides, but it was surveying 200 companies. It was really good information, but that's just something to look at because so that's where we here and organize it. We hire quiet confidence, hands down. Our technicians are not talkers. They are not, they will never do anything after hours. They're family focused. They're very humble. But they were, it was all of the unseen characteristics. They don't come through in an interview.
No, they actually are the worst interviewees.
They're the worst interviewers. And so then you're like, well, how do you get this out then? Right. And that's when you gotta kind of adapt your interview process and your questions to try to draw it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I dropped that link in and I at least wanted to share this again, because I will say this topic is really, really great. And I wanted to at least share and invite everybody here to join us in Chicago. I know we have a lot of OS1 program members on this call as well. You guys get the free tickets with two other teammates already included for Chicago. So we'll make sure that we drop the link in for you guys, OS1 members, to just do the opt-in if you're coming or not to the event. But again, 2 days. This is all about operationalizing your people at Chicago. And a lot of what we talked about today is also going to be, I want to say that we have a lot of goodies in place packed to release live at the event. So if this is something that is valuable to you, go ahead and click on that link and you can join us there in Chicago.
Yeah.
That's 14 to 15.
Yeah, we're excited for that one. Rico had a great comment about the way he approaches the recruiting. And Rico is like a expert.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes to hiring, do you want to share? And by the way, Rico, if you want to introduce yourself and just share what you do in the interview process to help figure us kind of pull that out.
Sure. Hey, everyone. I'm Rico. I'm currently the one leading our One to Leave VS program.
He says currently, because that could change by the day.
I could be promoted to a customer the following day. Who knows?
Yeah.
But going back to the recruitment standpoint, I think one personal thing I really learned over the past couple of years was that, you know, you don't ask black or white questions to any position. If you're hiring for a cleaner, if you're hiring for an office manager, you want to know how they think and how they answer during the interviews. You want to know asking the right questions. And by asking the right questions, it's the one that affects your business or that will affect your business, but not entirely, oh, how is this going to benefit me, if that makes sense. So one really good point or one really good lesson that I learned over time is that you don't ask for yes or no questions or even maybe. You ask for those questions where they're going to be able to think and say something genuine that has applied, that they have applied from their previous work or not, because that will allow you to know more about them. And over time, when things go rough in your business, you would know how they would act upon it as well. So those are my insights.
Okay, Rico, for everybody here, can you give us an example of like a question that you asked where they would have to give a genuine like response or answer so that you could kind of get to know them a little bit more?
Yeah. My questions usually start with, has there ever been a time, I'm losing my English, that you kind of came up with a, or that you encountered a problem with, say, a software or a tool? How did you manage to troubleshoot it? Did you troubleshoot it by your own? Did you feel the need to reach out to your manager first? That allows you to know how they would think, you know, in situations where they're going to be caught up with something that will pause them for their with their day to day. Situations. Go ahead. Sorry, Chris.
I was just saying that's fantastic. It's very situational.
And you know, it could be applied to a lot of areas in your business. I would say the way that I question, or the way that I formulate my questions, would rather much be relatable to how it would impact, you know, our 1LDVS program versus how it would benefit them as an employee. There's some business owners that might think, oh, you know, but I need them to be a benefit to our business. One thing that would really affect, you know, the course of your interviews with them would be giving them the spotlight or giving them the opportunity to explain themselves without feeling pressured. And that's where you'll know how genuine your applicant would be. Again, this applies to your cleaners. This applies to your office managers as well. Depends on the situation. But at the end of the day, you would want to focus more on, you know, how they think and how they would pose the responses to you.
Love that. Miguel, not Miguel, Rico. Could probably give us all some classes on how to interview.
I'll need to lock myself for 2 days, like what you did, Libby, if I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah. You have some great beaches, though, there nearby. So,
yeah.
Okay, guys.
Hiring sucks, right? Sorting through bad applications, ghosted interviews, and wasted time. It's all exhausting. That's why we built WooRecruit, the hiring system designed to attract and convert the right people for your business fast. What are some of the benefits? Well, you get more qualified applicants without lifting a single finger. Increase your show rate, eliminate the worry of ghosting. Track every single step of our process with real-time data. If you're tired of hiring headache, go to WooRecruit.com and let us start filling your open roles today.